You are now listening to The Brunch Babe. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Brunch Babe podcast. I'm super excited that you're joining me for another reservation. And who am I? Well, you should know by now, but I am your host, the creator, editor, producer, all the things, Lauriane Ellie Stacy. And I'm super excited for you to join me today because today we're booked for a reservation at our crazy Aunt Helen's. Obviously not my aunt because I personally don't know a Jamaican named Helen, but if you're out there, what's good, Helen? We're headed to a neighborhood restaurant serving American comfort food with some really dope, cool names for their drinks. So super excited to get into all of that. Today, I am lucky enough to be joined by Ama Okoto, who is a Black feminist writer and storyteller hailing from right here in Washington, D.C. Ama's work hopes to curate safe havens for Black people impacted by trans misogynoir to explore their relationship to personhood, freedom, and the erotic. Today's conversation is super exciting for me. I just love to be in spaces, obviously, with Black women and hear from them and learn from them. And so I'm really excited for us to get into it. And we are going to do that very, very shortly. But before we do, I want to offer the teensiest bit of a small content warning. At one point during today's episode, Ama and I discuss our experience with violence, particularly street harassment, and I share a brief but incomplete story of experiencing physical threat and harm. The incident did not take place in the DMV, and this incident took place over like 10 years ago. This is not the focus of the conversation, but it is there about halfway through the episode. So I wanted to offer a quick heads up to anyone who might be listening. Now that we've gotten all the formalities out of the way, I personally don't like cold eggs. So it's time to get seated. It's time for this reservation to start. So let's jump right in. So whenever I open a brunch menu, the first thing that I usually see are the appetizers. I'm usually thinking, how can I start off this experience? But when Ama sent me the menu for Crazy Aunt Helen's, I just immediately saw these dope cocktails, and the names got me before I even made my way to the food. They had cocktails like Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, White Gotta Be White Peppa, and the Jack Skeleton. And I just knew I was about to have fun. Even with the mocktails, Let's Work Out the Kinks and Sage It Ain't So had me ready to go. I say all this to say, when I first met Ama, it was at a happy hour for a fellowship we're both participating in. And I was like, Ama, what a beautiful and strong and simple name. So before we dive into the main course of this interview, let's give people a little sample, a cocktail offering to excite the palate. Who is Ama?
Please, LA. First of all, thank you so much. I've never heard nobody talk about my name like that and put that on my tombstone. Thank you very much. This is actually the question I was the least prepared to answer. And so I'm gonna try to do it without sounding incredibly dramatic. But yeah, I'm a Black girl from Washington, DC, born and raised. My family comes from the South. So my daddy's family is from Mississippi. My mom's family is from Tennessee. As you can see, family is very important to me. I'm talking about myself and talking about my parents at the same time. But yeah, so Black girl from DC, I'm a writer, I'm a dancer. I have a cat named Alicia. She is not.
I didn't know you danced.
Yes. Okay. So I did West African dance growing up. And then I was in a dance company here in DC called, Farafina Khan. And I did that for all of high school. I don't know if you've heard of like dance plays, but Dance Africa also takes place here in DC. So we perform there every summer. I love to get a little jig on.
Okay.
Yes, I love to dance. I love to dance. I've actually fallen off of it as an adult, which is one of those things I want to get back to. You know, the older you get, you kind of just forget the things that you loved as a child, the things that brought you joy. So it's one of those things I want to get back into, which also reminds me, I box as well. So another thing I'm trying to get back into is boxing. What else about me? Yeah, I'm a writer. I love romance. I love writing about love stories, particularly erotica, because I, for any number of reasons, I'm sure you can guess, but I really enjoy writing romance. I love reading romance. I love love stories in every form that they take. Yeah, I'm really passionate about Black people. Black liberation is my whole bread and butter. It's what I live for. It's what I breathe. Yeah, how much into my background do you want me to get? Like, family life story.
We're gonna dive deeper. We're gonna dive deeper later on. But that was great to learn because I'm like dancing. Yes, because one of the things when I moved to DC, I really wanted to explore more things. Like, what are the things that I was happy with as younger that, like you said, you give up during your adulthood or, you know, slowly kind of fade away once you start working and grinding. And I started taking last year, like salsa and bachata classes here in DC. And I was like, oh my God, this is so fun. So I love to hear it. Now I'm going to have to ask you for some dance studios so I can do other things.
Please, I have so many. I'm also trying to get my partner to take some jazz dance classes with me. I want to learn some more of those like Black American two-step dance styles. And I think they do some classes up here in the DMV area. So you and me both, girl. And I have several studio recommendations, so I will send you some.
Yes. Okay, perfect. So before we continue, obviously it's the Brunch Babe podcast and you wanted to highlight Crazy Aunt Helen's. Tell us more about it.
So I actually got that recommendation for a friend specifically for this podcast. But it's in an area of DC that me and my mom love. It's around Eastern Market. Really nice area, has a lot of up and coming restaurants, which of course means it was hit very hard by gentrification. But not to go there right now. But anyway, I really love that restaurant. I love the food that we got when we went there. I had shrimp and grits. I think my mom had like eggs Benedict with the tofu scramble. But to be completely honest, we went there and we crushed the drinks. Like you mentioned, they have a really good drink selection. I've recently gotten into Moscow Mules. So I had four of those and they were—
oh my God.
Girl, like, he's been here drinking. But they were very good. I loved the service as well. The staff is really fun. I think they also do like drag brunches on Sundays. They have some like drag performances. They do a storytelling hour as well down on the first floor. So they just have a lot going on there. And I love the area. I love eating out over there too.
No, I love it. I saw that. I was just like, I've never went. Open up a menu and then they had a section literally on the menu that was like all the events for the month.
Yeah.
And then their events page was like posted through like the summer. I was like, oh, they're like on it. Like, this is a spot.
Yeah.
Yay. So for those of you listening, I hope you go and check out Crazy Aunt Helen. We're going to take a quick break before we get into our main conversation. Pause. Okay. Now, as you heard from Amma, the dishes at Crazy Aunt Helen's are pretty straightforward. The shrimp and grits, they have biscuits and gravies. And shout outs to the vegetarian option and for your mom for trying that, because we like options for the people. So thinking about that, being straight, being direct, when you think about the DMV and the things you love about it, what makes it special to you? What makes you call it home?
It's funny because growing up, I did not consider the DMV home, but I was very adamant about I'm from DC, I'm not from the DMV. As an adult, you know, you kind of let go of some of that childish beef. But I'm gonna talk specifically about DC. I think I love it for so many reasons. One, it's home. My family has been here for about 2-3 generations now. And we have a lot of history in this small town. Specifically, like most recently to me, my parents founded the oldest private African-centered school here in DC, which came about during the 80s as a response to a lot of the violence that was happening because of the crack epidemic, because of increased police presence and violence in DC. And I think that, again, as part of that, my father came up to DC to go to Howard when he was a kid, but then kind of got really involved in local organizing at Howard University. So I think he was part of the introduction of the African American Studies program into the university itself. He liked to talk a lot about when Dr. King was assassinated, how he went down to Columbia Heights and looted and was like throwing rocks in stores. So I just grew up with a lot of those stories about DC, specifically about Black DC. Like I mentioned, I am a Black liberationist. I have considered that a part of my identity since I was a child. So growing up in Chocolate City, but also in a place that is so ravaged by gentrification. And I think that's something I've been aware of since I was a kid. I kind of have this very like intense relationship to how Black people are treated in DC. And so I think a lot of my love for it is in a desire to see my people taken care of, which sounds very intense to just be talking about my hometown. But yeah, just to be completely honest, that is a big part of my love for this city. But I think also there's just so much here. It's a small metropolitan city. So I think for us who grew up here and who are not very familiar with the politics of DC, because I certainly wasn't until I was an adult. But for us, it can definitely feel like a small town. I love saying that I either know everybody or I know somebody that knows somebody else. One of my favorite things to experience is like, if I'm downtown or chilling on U Street with my friends and I see an old high school buddy, I'm like, yeah, I'm really from here. That's my man. So yeah, I think it's home in so many ways that, you know, like my great aunt was one of the first Black women to work at Walter Reed Science Department. My other great aunt was like one of the earliest Black tennis coaches at, I forget the name of the tennis place that's down here. But anyway, my family just has like a lot of rich and deep history in this city. So much of it is just like personal family. And then a lot of it is also community oriented, liberation focused, and just like seeing that Black people in the city are taken care of. Yeah. So I think DC will always hold my heart for any number of reasons. I love the people here. I think that we are in such a like insular community. It's so Black here, and it has been for so very long. It's so Black. We have our own little small hub of culture, our own music, our own mumbo sauce, our own everything, which can be said of so many Black cities all throughout America, like Detroit, Chicago, so many places. So I can imagine a lot of people probably feel similarly about their own hometowns, but yeah, I love it here. I love the people here. I love how everybody's willing to do what they gotta do to get what they want. Yeah. DC's
no. I love it. Like even watching you like speak about it, there's such a reverence and respect for the city. And like you said, a deep, deep love that comes with that history. So thank you for sharing. Yes. So I know you're a writer and you focus on Black joy, the erotic. And something that I think is really interesting is how you understand the importance of the erotic and pleasure in Black liberation. Could you share more about that with us?
Yeah. So I think the first place I really learned about like joy and care and grace was from my mom. So my parents, like I mentioned, you know, kind of founded this Black liberation, Black radical community, one of many in DC, which is another thing I love about the city. There's so many Black people here. You know, you have your bougie Black elite, you got your regular everyday Black folk, you got your Pan-African hoteps, like DC got all the Negroes. but all that to say that my dad and my mom, I think, approach liberation in very different ways. My father is very much so hotep to the day he died, Pan-African, like the Black family, build up the Black community. My mom, on the other hand, is much more people-focused, much more community-oriented in that way, where I think that she has always taught me that care and love is how we should move as a people. And one of the things that we want to strive for in terms of like liberation and freedom. Whereas, you know, I think my father has always thought about freedom and liberation as, you know, Black people need our own neighborhood, our own nation, our own army to protect ourselves. So anyway, I think that my first introduction to like joy and pleasure and freedom was from my mom. And then as I got older and started dabbling in Black feminist theory, started learning about it and reading the women and the people who wrote about it, Audre Lorde, June Jordan, Alice Walker, bell hooks, Patricia Hill Collins, those became like my next formative introductions to joy and relationships and love and like what roles those all play in our fight for freedom. And I want to give a quick shout out to one of my undergrad professors, Dr. Baina Muhammad. I took her my sophomore year, I took a class called Black Women in Organizing or something like that, Black Women in Freedom Fighting. But essentially the class was about the role that Black women, Black queer people have played in liberation building and liberation movement, and how a lot of that work is like teaching, caretaking, feeding people, mothering, caring for your community. And so I think that these people have like really helped me establish that joy is going to be like a foundational part of my life and also in what I'm hoping to seek in terms of freedom. And then I think also, like I mentioned, I love romance. I love love stories. And so much of that is about like just finding the joy in this everyday chaotic life. So I think there's just so much about love stories and about romance in particular that kind of just brings me joy amidst all this other chaos in my life. And then lastly, I say that when I think about all the stuff that like white supremacy robs us of, like life, health, sustenance, care, safety, I think that like joy is a really, really big part of that. Like so many of us, like we live on this spinning rock, this ball of fiery rock. Why am I going to work every day? Like, why am I being harassed on the street? Why am I being concerned about, you know, somebody spewing racial hatred at me when I could just be chilling on a beach, eating a mango or something, smoking a J? Yeah. Like, I want to live a joyful life. I don't want to have to fight these battles. I don't want to have to be fighting for freedom for every day of my life. And I think I felt that way since I was a child. Growing up, my understanding of my role and my purpose in this life was to be a freedom fighter. I remember asking my dad if I could be like a dancer when I grew up. He was like, no, you're going to work in school and you're going to help Black people get free. And for a long time, I think that's like what I thought that that was my purpose and my role. But I think as an adult, it's really, that's not my bag. I just want to be joyful and experience joy. And I want for my community to be able to do that. And I recognize that one of the things that's preventing my people and myself from being able to experience joy is like all these very terrible systems of oppression. So yeah. In my view, I'm like, I have to break through those to just get to the joy on the other end. But like, that has to be the only reason we're here on this planet, is to be joyful and to like live on this abundant earth. Like, bitch, there are palm trees on the street. Why are we doing all this extra shit when I could just be living a great, wonderful, abundant life?
No, I love that. I feel like as you were talking, for me, you know, juxtaposing like your father's vision versus your mother's vision, or even like their process to freedom, right? How did you come to a point where you're like, I want to lean away from this? I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to say like the hardships of fighting, but that can take a toll, right? Fighting for freedom in a way that's marching and protesting and like the ways that we always think about it can take a toll. And even the care work that you describe also takes a toll. So How do you find the balance of both of the ways that you were brought up and also choosing to lean into that side that says actually joy needs to be our North Star?
So I'll say one, I think, where the shift happened was my mom actually left my dad in 2010. And that was kind of like, not just a family separation, but I think ideologically there was also a huge separation where me and my little sister, so I am the 9th of 10 children. I was also raised in a polygamous household. So it was my father, my mother, and I call them my two other mothers. So in 2010, my mom left and took me and my little sister with her. And so I think we kind of were extracted from this very insular Pan-African community where the idea of liberation and Black freedom was very much rooted in like heteropatriarchy. And this is me speaking as a 26-year-old, 27-year-old. I can now look back and be like, it's very heteropatriarchal. It just leans into a lot of things that I no longer agree with. So I think my mom separating and kind of throwing us into a whole new universe is kind of what it felt like, where we were no longer in this very insular community. We were now a part of a much broader community of Black people who weren't even thinking about freedom in those same terms. Like, a lot of these people are just trying to get by. A lot of these people are, you know, just surviving. And even if, you know, they're doing more than surviving, like, they're not thinking about liberation and freedom in this aspect. I also was raised Pan-African in the idea that Black people need to go back to Africa in order to be free. This is not an idea that I subscribe to now as an adult, but I think that when my parents separated, that was one of those things that shifted for me, where I was like, Black people don't have to go back to Africa to be free. Like, Black people deserve to be free for the simple fact of it. And so I think that for me was like a very dramatic shift in my thinking, where I was like, Black people shouldn't have to do all of these other things just to experience joy and freedom. And so part of like in a roundabout way, what I'm trying to say is that the balance for me comes in, there's this big mission that I'm trying to accomplish, this big goal of freedom that I'm trying to achieve for my people. But there are small things that I can do in my everyday life to free myself just a little bit from just like the pressures of capitalism, the pressures of white supremacy, the pressures of misogyny. And so like for me, what that looks like is, so I've experienced a lot of very violent street harassment here in DC, and I don't know what it is about this city, but it's very different than street harassment that I've experienced in other places in the US. But one of the things I did was saved very, very hard to buy a car so that I could be safe moving around my city and feel safe. And one of the reasons that, one of the things that triggered that was a physical attack, a physical altercation on the train station at Metro Center. And so the man like attacked me, and I'm sitting there like by myself, fending for myself, and nobody's helping me. And I was like, okay, thank you. But like after that, I was like, and this is going to sound a little controversial, I think, but you know, when people talk about street harassment and they tell Black women like, y'all need to be more comfortable calling the police on Black men. And then you'll have Black women be like, I'm not comfortable with that because of the racial dynamics that exist there. And I think that's like the place that a lot of us have to operate from. It's like, how can I protect myself right now in the immediate, even though there's this larger big thing at play? And so I think that's what I'm trying to communicate here, is that I just try to protect myself, to make sure that I feel good and safe and whole, because if I'm not that, then I can't help the rest of us get free. I can't help my community if I'm feeling unsafe. I can't help my community if I'm not feeling well. And we'll probably get to this later, but I think that that is an important ideology for me to hold on to, but it can very easily like lean into an individualist mindset where you're only prioritizing yourself and your care over the betterment of your community or the betterment of other people. And so I think that's another like balance that we have to find, is, you know, how to fight for the big thing without sacrificing yourself, but then also how to care for yourself without it being at the expense of other people.
Yeah, no, I hear that absolutely. I always think about the airplane metaphor, right? Like this big system is this plane going down, but reality, if I don't have on my little mask, if I'm not breathing my little oxygen, there is no way that I can help anyone else. And being burnt out in a system or overwhelmed by a system are very real things. And I think what's hard is that we've experienced such a like commercialization of self-care, right? Like self-care, especially with social media now, looks like you're in a luxury bathhouse and you know, and it's not always like, how do you sit with yourself and journal and make sure that you're genuinely okay? And also thinking about where the roots of some of those things lie, right? I know that like, sometimes I joke around, like I Uber everywhere and people are like, you should save money, you should take the train. And I'm like, actually, I feel very overwhelmed on the train. Like I'm fortunate that I've never been like attacked in a way that I'm sorry that you've experienced, but I have been harassed on the train and that shit is overwhelming. Like men coming up to you and saying things, or people making you feel like they're not going to help or whatever else, that is a very overwhelming feeling. And I think truly I budget for my Ubers. I'm like, I'm not going to this place at 11 o'clock at night on the metro. Like I don't like walking home scared alone at night. Like I've had a knife held up to my throat. Do you know how scary that is to happen at night? Like that is really scary. And so there is a part that's like, you have to think about, yes, we need better public transportation and we need access and we can fight for those things. And I also have to think about like, is it gonna make sense for me to be overwhelmed on this train? Yeah. Probably not.
Also, thank you for saying that. I think I oftentimes feel a lot of guilt about what I need to do to avoid street harassment, because it really is like a very triggering and anxiety-inducing and overstimulating experience. And I don't often feel like people understand that. And I think it was in college where I finally just came to the conclusion that like, I think people need to So I think one of those questions people always ask when they talk about street harassment is like, well, what am I supposed to do when I see somebody attractive on the street? And my answer is now like, leave them alone. Stop being
leave
weird.
Them alone.
Not a social setting. This is somebody going on about their day. And I think I talk to my partner about this all the time. I'm like, maybe somebody does want you to go smack at them on the street, but I think by and large, there is just so much danger that is apparent to so many of us that you are better off just not being weird and just leaving people alone on the street. I think that should just be the rule of thumb. Leave people alone.
Absolutely. Like, I think personally, and maybe this is me being a little naive, I think you know when someone wants you to approach them. Like, mm-hmm. Are they staring at you as well? Are they smiling at you? And not in an uncomfortable smile, but like in a way that feels like open and inviting, because I think there's a difference. And I'm like, unless y'all are choosing to ignore this, you can tell when someone is averting your gaze. You can tell when someone is just trying to go about their day. Like,
yeah.
So hard things, but real things.
We'll be right back to our conversation shortly. And we're back.
I want to talk more about like your writing and this idea of like Black romance and joy from that. I love my romance in the form of reality dating TV. You know, thank I mean, you. I did have to, I had to unsubscribe from like Bachelor Nation and that nonsense. But I love me a Love Island. I love me like, I just love the dating nonsense. I love the chaos of it. I think, I know people are like, it's not real. I was like, I don't care. Okay.
Is it not real? I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe some of those people are like paid actors. I know the, I think some of them are not.
I think some of them come in very naive. And I think you can tell when the producers are producing. Mm-hmm, and I think you can mm-hmm. tell when the people are just like, fuck it, I'm going to do what I want. Or maybe I've just been watching for so long that I'm like,
I peep game.
Exactly. So tell us your experience, romance, joy, Black joy, all of it.
Like my experience with it, or
you connect this experience of joy and freedom to finding joy in how you're expressing yourself through writing, but also through Black romance. So more about how you got on that path.
Yeah. Again, with my mom. So my mom has been reading romance since I was a kid. I think I have as well with like the YA books. I love Mae Cabot, who is the woman who wrote Princess Diaries, which we all love, I'm sure.
Yes.
So I think I grew up reading a lot of YA romance. My mom is also a big romance lover of books. But then I'll also say, because of my parents' relationship, and I realize I'm talking a lot about my parents, but I think that's also a good part of how I have determined my identity over the years. It's like just thinking on my mom's history and her personal experiences. But anyway, all that to say that my parents' relationship was not one that was characterized by love or romantic devotion. And I think that's something my mom has always craved. And like, she's done so vocally. She's a very vulnerable person. She's also a Pisces. So she like loves love.
Pisces moon, I get it. Oh,
yeah, you lovers, y'all are lover girls. Anyway, so I think I grew up watching my mom love. Me and my mom love a good romance movie. Like, oh my God, which reminds me, I need to watch Waiting to Exhale, which, yes, is a romance. Don't let anybody tell you differently. So I think it started with my mom, just her love of books, of romance books specifically. And then as I got older, also started reading romance. But then I started, as I became a little bit more politicized and a bit more critical of the books, also realized that there was a lot of like politics that were happening either in the publication of the romance books themselves or within the types of stories that people chose to tell. So as I got older, just kind of started paying attention to more of those and thinking about that the romance that we write about and the romance that I read, I wanted to also be reflective of the kind of universe and the kind of world that I want to create, and the kind of person that I want to be and just the kind of community that I want to be in. And so for me, I see that as like romance is a place to talk about a lot of those things. I think as a genre, it doesn't get taken very seriously. You know, people expect you to talk about very serious, hard issues in a fiction book or even like a women's fiction book, or like a theory book or something like that. But I really, because of my own, I think, commitment to joy and to love and to romance as really crucial to like developing relationships with each other and to building community, which I think is really crucial to seeing the freedom and liberation that we talk about on like this big, massive scale. Lost my train of thought, but anyway, all that to say that I think I love using and seeing romance as romance books as a way to like explore relationships and explore love, which I think is really important to me and my idea of freedom, like personal freedom and also communal freedom.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I think there's something about the idea of love that we're not supposed to say that we want it, mm-hmm. and we're not supposed to be clear in the way that we want it.
Yeah.
And I feel that especially as I'm a single woman in these streets, but you know, like people, I feel like whenever you talk to folks, they're just kind of like, you just gotta wait for it. You just gotta, and it's just like, no, actually, I want to be loved. And these are the ways that I want to be loved. And this is the way love looks like in my family. And these are things I want or don't want from it. These are the way that love looks like in my friendships. This is what I want and don't want from it. And, you know, especially I would say, like, when it comes to romantic partners, we're not supposed to say, like, this is what I want or to express that desire. And I think what's really cool is that what you're saying is to lean into that and to lean into that desire and to lean into that want. And also I would say a need, right? Like we are operating from a sense of community, mm-hmm. and community takes love, that takes trust, that takes knowing people. And how can you build a community without saying like you want these things and defining what that looks like?
Yeah. And this is reminding me, another thing me and my partner talk about is, so when I met him, he was a very much like world peace pacifist, all we need is love type of person. And my mom is also that type of person. I will say I am not that girl. I am very much so a liberation is going to take fighting. It's going to take a lot of hard work. But what I think I can take from both of them and what I think is like becoming foundational to me is that amidst all of this like big fighting, as we work with each other individually, one-on-one, we have to have ethics of care. We have to care about each other. We have to move with this idea that I don't love you in this movie Hallmark way. I love you and because I am committed to showing up for you, because I'm committed to holding you accountable, because I'm committed to making sure that you are good. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of hardness around us, but if we can prioritize that in our individual relationships, if we just really think about what it means to care for each other. And I think this is one thing I don't understand about bigotry, just like on a like ideological level, is you see someone living their best joyful life, doing something that brings them joy and peace and comfort and safety, and that causes you to be hateful or to be hateful towards them. And I think that's just something I don't understand and that I don't get. So while I'm willing to get like mean and nasty over my own freedom or my own community's freedom, I think I'm also always moving with love and care so that in my relationships with people, I am showing them love. I am showing them care. It is even as like, as big as it goes with like community, I just try to move with love. And I say that while also knowing that like, let's all be peaceful and hold hands is not, like that's not, if you think love has to be a part of, you know, how we think about freedom and I think what we're fighting for. So we have to fight for the end result to be this joyful, peaceful thing.
Yeah, no, I love it. So from your own understanding, from like your worldview, what are the kind of relationships do you think we need to be seeking to have with joy and pleasure? How can folks really center it more in their own work, their experiences, or their things you're like, y'all are missing the mark. Like, get it the fuck together.
Okay, so I'm gonna start with how we can center it more. I think one easy way is just to do less for quote unquote the man and do more for your community and for yourself. So I think it could mean deprioritizing work in your life. It could mean doing more to prioritize the relationships you have with people. I know that was a big goal for me this year, was just to show up more in my relationships. So that means checking in with people more often. That means I set reminders on my phone to call my mom every day. So I think that's one thing. Saying no when things stop bringing you joy. So that be that relationships, be that jobs, be that people. I don't know, hobbies, whatever, like once it stops bringing you joy, don't be afraid to say no to it. And I talked to a good friend of mine about that a couple years ago and how like neither of us is afraid to leave relationships, which can, I think, come off very all or nothing sometimes, or like you're just really readily able to dispose of people. But for me, I view it as just like, this is no longer, you know, after trying to work through something, this is no longer like serving me. This is no longer bringing me joy. And I think particularly for people who are in romantic relationships with cishet men, they're like, you can't spend your whole relationship fighting to make it work. And this is something I am very passionate about, is, you know, helping my sisters who are involved with men to you know, not settle for them, to decenter them a little bit, to prioritize joy outside of that. And then to also, when, you know, they're causing you more stress than it's worth, to be like, girl, bye. I can't deal with that. I think also just lean more into compassion and grace when you're dealing with other people, compassion for yourself, compassion for others. And I think in general, like I said, joy and love is a big part of my like liberation theory. So I think in general, just being more radical for a lot of us, I think it's important to like fighting for the joy of everyone requires us to be a little bit more radical in how we fight for quote unquote freedom. I want people to push a little bit harder because there are a lot of people who are being robbed of joy, of safety, of care, of all the things, simply because, you know, some of us are choosing to hold on to these systems that serve us in some way or another. And then to your second point about where we miss the mark, you mentioned earlier Black luxury. I have so much beef with this movement, mostly because I feel like it has bastardized the idea of self-care as revolutionary. It has completely taken it from its original definition for Audre Lorde and for so many other radical theorists, and turned it into this consumer culture. I think for what I've seen, it for specifically Black women has been a way to step into like being elitist, to having money and to being able to access things that we typically haven't been able to access. But for reasons, the reason being because we've been oppressed, or either because we are Black, because we are Black women. So I think that that is one way that we miss the mark, is thinking of self-care as this very individual luxury elitist thing that should be gatekept. Whereas self-care, I think, is more like not putting all of your energy into your job and putting more energy into building relationships with your community members, into making sure that your neighbor is taken care of. Yeah, so I think that's really where we miss the mark, is this kind of consumer culture, individualist, Black luxury in service of capitalism, kind of bastardizing of the original concept.
No, I hear that. I hear that. I feel like it's so hard because it's also, it's everything that you said, right? This idea that like you've been left out of this for so long. And now there's almost, to me, there's almost a point to prove that like we can be in these spaces. And I'm like, we have to question what those spaces are and why we want to be there.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not gonna lie, I love me a bougie restaurant. And I love me spa and a little travel. And there is something about like, do I really want to be in spaces just because I've never been allowed there before? That's weird. Like,
I think also, and I talked to one of my mentors about this, that, you know, growing up poor, not having access to stuff, not being able to, like, I actually went through this recently. Like, I got into a luxury apartment that I can hardly afford simply because I wanted to meet some fucking granny countertops. Like, please stop. but I'm up here and I'm like, it costs way too much fucking money, for one. Two, like, I have a lot of beef with luxury apartments, a lot of beef with gentrification of, you know, Black cities and areas. Anyway, but I think that's one thing I've struggled with and trying to find the balance of. And I think that's kind of where this conversation can come into play, is like, I want to feel safe and I want to feel secure after being denied those things for so many years. And so, you know, I got me a cute little nonprofit job, pays well, I can afford to go to these bougie restaurants. But then I'm like, at what point do I become more community oriented? At what point does this, you know, signifier of safety stop being the thing that I need to feel good? And really, like, what does it mean? Like, what am I going to do with this newfound money that I have that, you know, my mother hasn't touched and my older siblings haven't touched? What am I going to do with it? And, you know, I could spend it on access into these luxury spaces, but I also have enough to, you know, take care of my community. When I see a mutual aid request, I can send some money. I can send some money to my good sis when she needs it. So, yeah.
No, that's real. I love it. So my not final, but I think you've talked a lot about like what you want for your community and the impact that you hope to make. I know that you a writer, obviously, but you also have other avenues of creativity. Are there other things that you hope to explore to make, to continue to make the impact that you're currently making? Or do you have visions of other impacts that you'd like to aspire to?
Well, on like a very small level, I want to edit for other authors. I really, you know, I'm a Virgo myself, and you can tell I believe in this astrology shit, but
I'm here for it. I'm like, please tell me your chart.
So yes, I am a Virgo sun. So I get a lot of like joy and satisfaction out of helping bring someone's vision to life. And I really, like I said, I think romance, because so much of our desires, so much of our politics, so much of like the stuff we keep hidden comes to light when we talk about our intimate relationships, when we talk about love, when we talk about romance. I think a lot about who we are and what we believe comes out into play. And I think that can be seen in the romance books that I read. So one thing I want to do is give more marginalized people the place to explore love and romance and sex. And I want to help them do that by editing. I also just love to read stories. I don't have all the good stories. I think there are a lot of people out here with some really great stories, and I want to help make them great and tell them and put them out there. Also, I want to figure out how I can like bring more young girls to the radical Black feminist side. I think that by and large, we're stuck in a very girl boss era of Black feminism on a big mainstream stage. It's very capitalistic, it's very girl boss, it's very transphobic, it's very queerphobic, it's very whorephobic, it's all the fucking phobics. And I think I talked to a lot of my homegirls about this, but my personal thought is that like the education of feminist theory happens on like this ladder. So I was also at my girl boss feminist phase when I was in early college. But you know, you read a little bit more, you grow, you get older, you have more experiences, you read more radical theory. And so I want to figure out like, where is my role in helping the girls move along the pathway? Cause I don't want us to get stuck in this girl boss era of feminism, because it does not serve us. It's not, like I said, it's not radical enough. Too many people being left out, too many people being forgotten in this very mainstream idea of what it means to be a feminist today. So I think what I'm trying to say is feminist education and feminist theory. I wanna like find out where I step into that. And I'm not an academic girl. School is not my bag. So I think what I wanna do is figure out like what community resources I can help elevate or help create to kind of help instill these values into our community in a very like natural and pretty early way, so that we don't get stuck in a feminism that, you know, doesn't serve us or serve our liberation at the end of the day. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Like, I love it. Do you have any work on the horizon that people should be watching out for?
Yes. So this year, I hope to, like I mentioned, get together a group of creatives who want to focus on themes of self-identity, erotica, and pleasure, get them together to just create something. It could be a zine, but I'm looking for people who are in a variety of mediums. So writers, authors, illustrators, artists, musicians, all types of people to like put together this body of work that explores our relationships to our identity and like our senses of self, to erotica, to sex, to pleasure, to joy. And I wanna focus it on people who experience trans misogynoir. So Black women, Black queer people, Black femmes, Black girls. Hopefully this year.
Okay, I love it. Okay, so before we wrap, let's take a little break and then we'll come back for dessert. So, like I mentioned earlier, the menu at Crazy Aunt Helen's is pretty direct, pretty straight up. I didn't see any explicit desserts on the menu, but I did see that they had some sweet plates, which kind of works, because if you've listened to any episodes of this podcast, I'm always like, I didn't have dessert. Next time I'll have dessert. And so we know that I'm skipping dessert.
Every time.
But if there's not dessert, I usually try to ask like what's better, like the French toast or the pancakes. And that's literally what the sweet plates are. It was like two pancakes and a French toast. And I'm like, maybe I could ponder.
The French toast. It's the French toast.
Okay. Good to know. So before we walk away, what do you hope that people walk away with from this conversation? What is the nugget from our time together?
I guess like be bold, be messy, be vulnerable, and seek joy in your doing so. And be radical, like be fucking radical. I think that's one thing I live by. I listen to the people who are a little bit more radical than me because they be right in 10, 20 years. So yeah, push.
I love it. I think that's great. I love it. Be bold, be messy, be radical. like
do that.
Do that. Perfect. Amma, thank you so much for joining us today, joining me today. Where can the people find you if they want to keep up with your work and all that you have going on?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you, LA. This was a blast. Thank you so much for having me. And you can find me at my website at ammaokoto.com or Amma the Writer on Instagram or Twitter. And that's Amma the Writer with two E's, a la Megan Thee Stallion.
Hey.
You guys, thank you so much for making it on time to another reservation with the Brunch Babe podcast. You can find me across all social media at the L.A. Stacey, that's T-H-E-L-A-S-T-A-C-E-Y, and the podcast on Instagram at the Brunch Babe Podcast. You'll find content, images, trips, clips, past, upcoming episodes, guests, all the things on that Instagram page. So make sure you're following it. And honestly, I'm just going to ask that you share it with at least one person who's into brunch, who's into Black women, into women of color, into talking about the things. Share the page, y'all. Appreciate it. And if you know a great brunch spot and you're like, you absolutely need to check this out, if you're like, I know this dope Black woman, this dope woman of color who should be featured on a later episode, please reach out to me at lathebrunchbabe@gmail.com. Send me an email. Don't forget to leave a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Every supportive word helps. Thank you. And remember to be bold, messy, and radical this week. Wasn't that such great advice? I loved it. Yeah, I'm going to try. Be bold, be messy, and be radical. Our next reservation drops on Thursday. Can't wait to see you then. Bye, Brunch Babes.